sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets losing momentum. Hack attacks growing. Employment numbers are in. And our special guest today, Frank Curzio, going to talk to us about all sorts of interesting things, I am sure. All this and much more on episode number 416 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and welcome. Andrew Horowitz here, and it is June 2015. Clearly no letting up in hiring in May. We've seen that there is a continuation of hiring. There's some weird things that happened, though. Last Thursday, the International Monetary Fund took quite the unusual steps of offering the Federal Reserve some advice. Seemed to want to tell the central bank that, you know, maybe you shouldn't raise interest rates until 2016. Now, given the large hiring gains this spring, the Fed may choose to ignore this recommendation, clearly. So we did see that U.S. employers added about 280,000 people and new workers to the last hiring report last month. And seemingly that the labor participation rate has increased slightly. The jobless rate ticked up to 5.5% in May. And we saw that the U6 rate, which is the unemployed and the underemployed number, came in at 10.8%. So what was interesting was that according to the Labor Department, they saw that 120,000 of the new jobs were in the leisure and hospitality and service industry sectors, but there were also about 47,000 hires in the healthcare sector. So that was kind of good. We saw that consumer spending was flat in April last month, and it was kind of a disappointing news item where we saw that the March number advanced by about 0.5%, but consumer incomes did in fact improve in April by 0.4%, although there were no gains seemingly in March, but still good numbers, better numbers coming out. I think that I had been mentioning a lot about the whole manufacturing disconnect between hiring and manufacturing numbers. And the ISM services number came in at about 55.7, which fell about 2.5 points from the last report. And that's good, though, that we're still seeing that it's over 50, which is clearly the demarcation line for contraction under 50 or expansion. So we did see that because of some of the news that was out, the numbers on Wall Street, the equity indices were down for the week. The S&P slipped about 0.69%, and the NASDAQ lost just only about 0.03%, still seeing that some of the biotech areas and healthcare held up pretty well. The Dow was the loser, down about almost 1%, and we did see the continuation of oil slide down to about 59.13 on the last tick, and the close down about 2% for the week, which was kind of interesting. Lots coming up next week. We do have some earnings. We have Sears Holdings coming out, H&R Block, Dave & Buster's, Casey's General. Apple is going to be kicking off a worldwide developers conference, which is kind of interesting. This is going to be on Monday. Tuesday, we're going to see Lululemon, Athletica, Converse, Pep Boys, Hanvavian, Burlington Stores, Quiksilver. We're going to see April wholesale inventories, Krispy Kreme, Men's Warehouse, on Wednesday. And then we're going to see retail sales numbers coming in from the Commerce Department on Thursday. And we're going to see some other things like Restoration Hardware. I'm kind of interested in what's going to happen with Restoration Hardware. Seeming like housing has been a bit noisy in terms of new homes and resales. Restoration Hardware seems to have some products that are extremely high priced and a lot of knockoffs around. So we're going to see about that. And then on Friday, this is probably important, we're going to see the Producer Price Index coming out and the initial University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index as well. So lots happening this week. I do want to Let you know that if you have any questions, you can always ask me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And all the show notes that we and people that we have on the show are linked right inside the episode notes for this episode over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can follow me also on Twitter. It's Andrew Horowitz, one word. And on Periscope, because remember on Tuesday nights, we're doing this little thing where we're live streaming on Periscope, at least the audio, 10 p.m. on Tuesday evenings, sharp, with John C. Dvorak. So make sure to listen into that. You can hear it live. Of course, we're recorded. It's available on iTunes, etc. So either way, but if you want to join in that little Periscope thing, it's kind of fun where we have some ability to interact with the audience. So go to Periscope. It's an app available on either iOS or Android systems, only on smartphones or tablets, it seems, at this point at least. You go over, just look up Periscope and then download it and then follow Andrew Horowitz, one word. We stream through that directly. Anyway, let's get right to our guest today because I want to ask him questions. And when we have Frank on, it's always a time when we can spend a good amount of time on a lot of different subjects, a lot of different topics, and get some really good advice. No question about that, that the interaction we have, I think, is something that a lot of you really like. And I like that as well because I always learn something from Frank. And our special guest, you know who he is. You love him. He's an all-around good guy, Frank Curzio. FrankCurzio.com, writer, educator. Yep, start again. And our special guest today, Frank Curzio. You know him, you love him. FrankCurzio.com. He's a writer, an educator, stock picker extraordinaire, good friend of the show, and a great podcast. Just an idol, really. If there was a podcast idol show, he'd be on it. Right, Frank, hey, man, what's going on?
Good. I was going to let you keep going again.
Actually trimming down. I know you just lost like 20-something pounds or so.
Keep going.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Doesn't look at a year over 25. Anyway.
I love it. Expectations are high now, yeah, so I love it.
Yeah. So let's. I have so much to talk to you about. And when you're on, we get a lot of great comments from people because you really, you know, hit to the heart of things that are very factual. You know, no fluff, no talk in your book per se. You know, you talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly all together. I have a list of things that I was thinking about talking to you about, and we'll kind of branch out and talk about other things as well. But let's go through some things. So in no particular order, oil. So oil, the big question of the day some time ago was, is oil a harbinger of some other bad news on economic growth that may be coming? Is it the canary in the coal mine? Recently, we saw that oil had a really nice run from in the 40s to the 60s, and it's a big retracement of where it was. Everybody and their brother was all about $20 oil, $25 oil, $30 oil. OPEC was pumping. Then we saw a lot of the rig count go down. We saw many of the oil names, services, and otherwise do really, really, really poorly. And then the, you know, what? Where are we now? I know we just saw that OPEC recently said, hey, we're going to keep their production and we're not going to, limit it. And where are we now in terms of the big picture of oil companies, oil, et cetera?
I still think that, I mean, there's so much supply in the market. I don't think it's an economic indicator that there's not a lot of demand. We just come up with technologies where we could explore for oil, which is unbelievable. It's amazing. I saw this technology firsthand visiting almost every shale area across America. And now that we have this technology, we've just produced so much oil, which is a great thing for our country, you know, short, long term, you know, so we're not that reliant on the Saudis, where we're just about the largest producer of oil in the world. 10 years ago, that was unthinkable. So where we are right now, we have a lot of supply in the market. I will say that the companies are doing a fantastic job of cutting back, right, when oil prices came down, where for example, in the gold industry, we're not really seeing that, right? Gold prices have come down. If you look at all the gold producers and what they're doing, you're seeing record production because they're still able to make a little bit of a margin. So maybe, you know, they're able to produce gold for $900 an ounce, even $1,000 an ounce. They're still making a little bit of a margin. So they're producing as much as they can because those margins used to be so much bigger to generate profits. But in reality, it would be good for the gold companies to completely cut back, almost like the steel companies did in 2008, 2009.
Yeah, shut down.
They locked themselves in a room and said, okay, we need to shut down. We're not producing. And what happened? Prices bounced back. That's why you're not seeing a recovery in gold. in oil, these guys have been through this so many times. Not so much the shale producers, especially the new ones, but the bigger oil companies know exactly what to cut, and they're laying off employees, which isn't good. But you know, if you're looking in general where the oil industry is, I think we still have a lot of oil, a lot of supply in the market. I think prices are probably going to stay, you know, it's a boring answer, but I think they're going to stay between 45 and 60 for a while. I don't see them much higher. And they can go to 65 and even 70, just like natural gas went to 650 briefly before coming down from a trader perspective. But from a fundamental perspective, I think they're going to stay pretty much in this area, 60, like between 50 and 60 probably for the next couple of years until a lot of that supply comes off the market. It's going to take a while.
Is there going to be more M&A? I mean, I thought we would see at least some of these companies scooped up. What's happening is the companies instead have been, you know, doing what they can to lay off employees. They have been doing what they can to shed assets, shut down their rigs, et cetera. I thought we were going to see a little bit more in the area of M&A. And really, we saw a few things, you know, but nothing major.
Well, there's no blood in the streets, right? I mean, it recovered so quickly. How many big companies have you seen gone out of business? I mean, you're not even seeing M&A activity in the gold industry yet. But when you're looking, when you really want M&A activity, you want to get good value. And these companies have great real estate. But the reason why you're not seeing M&A activity is because they leverage themselves. And what did they do, especially the new shale guys, where a lot of the majors missed out on the shale revolution, right? You're not seeing too many majors. You're seeing, you know, the Pioneers, the EOGs. You know, those are the major companies, the Continentals, that own massive acreage, but they also carry a lot of debt. So if you're taking over these companies, you have to take over that debt. And it's still dangerous because if oil prices do fall lower, now you're taking over a company, you're taking over their debt, and you can't drill on their property because oil prices probably need to be more than $60. So if you see 70 or 80, you might see M&A activity right now. Either that or you have to see prices come down a lot where Continental isn't hedged at all. So if oil prices went to 20, they're going to get crushed. Then it makes sense for a company to come in and take them over. But right now, it's not like the bargain basement that is going to, you know, result in high M&A activity. So I don't see a lot of M&A activity, at least in this sector, unless we see wild swings in prices and you know, companies do bad, I think.
Well, what about Pioneer? I know this one stock that you and I mentioned at one time, and Einhorn was out just absolutely obliterating the company in all sorts of ways during the, you know, recent a conference where he said that, you know, the company was doing some interesting footnote work in terms of how they were valuing things and the expectations they had. This was, you know, took the stock down a few percent, but really didn't throw it down. I mean, he was saying that he was short in it and his company should go down probably to 80 from, I don't know, where it is now, 120s?
Yeah, I looked at his research slide by slide, and I think it's pretty obvious what he was saying, that if oil prices go low, the frackers are going to be in trouble. And of course, that's true, right? If oil prices go low, it's expensive to frack, right? Especially shale areas over
$60. Watch your language, buddy. Watch your language.
Yeah. And in the Bakken, it's even more expensive, right? It's like $65, $70 bucks. But when I saw his research, and one of the flaws in it, I think he's brilliant, is he was using he used a historical analysis of how much it cost for them to produce a barrel, and he used it over the last 10 years. And I thought that was really bad because as far as 2 years ago, I mean, I don't even go back 5-7 years, but the technology is unbelievable now. So the costs have come down dramatically. I mean, they have pad well drilling where you could drill 20 wells with using one rig. They never had this technology 3-4 years ago. So you can't use that, because he was saying it costs $21 in CapEx to produce, and it doesn't cost that much now. It's much less than that. So based on that number and everything else, production and distribution, he was saying that they lose money for every barrel they produce, which is not true. That's one of the negatives on it.
Yeah.
The next thing is Pioneer has one of the best real estate packages in all the shale industry. They're in the prime areas, right? Now, you're looking at a company that's significantly hedged. They're one of the most hedged companies. So my disagreement with him is, of course, if oil prices come down, there's a lot of frackers that are going to get nailed. But they're going to have the best margins in the business because they're hedged the most next to EOG Resources. So even if that scenario plays out, I would think that this would be the last company you would short, because there's so many other companies that are going to get destroyed. Just like we saw with the mining industry and gold and silver companies. Those small companies, they don't have a lot of cash in the bank. They're leveraged. Those are the ones that are going to get killed. And you have Pioneer that's hedged at over $70 a barrel for the next 2 years. They're going to have better margins if oil prices crash. So for me, I just didn't think that was the best short. I think Continental would have been the best short. But Einhorn's a great guy and he's smart. But I disagree with that, with his thesis specifically on Pioneer.
Okay. All right. Let's switch over to economics for a second. Okay. So from what I see, at least recently, has been that in terms of economics, manufacturing and the core information related to, let's say, GDP and production has been kind of slipping a bit. In fact, it's looking pretty poorly. But on the other hand, there's this disconnect somehow where employment looks really good. You know, in fact, we saw this week 285,000 new ads, much better than expected. 5.5 unemployment rate, still in that range, you know, a little 0.4, 0.5, not a big deal differential. And we're seeing initial claims sub 300,000. We're seeing productivity, though, drop costs for, on a productivity standpoint, costs move higher. And there's something I don't really understand on how we're seeing a bit of a slowdown from a GDP / manufacturing standpoint and overall output of the U.S. to all of these employees continuing to be put on. What am I missing here?
Well, I mean, there's so many things that factor into GDP, and they strip out so many things that it's so difficult to tell. But one of the things that people will talk about recently is obviously the jobs report, right? And one of the things that I want to point out in the jobs report that's very important is we finally saw wages rise, and they rose only by like 2 or 3%. But the fact that you're seeing wages rise now means that the Fed has to start raising rates, and hopefully they'll do it sooner rather than later. They prepared us, right? They basically conditioned us to say for the last 2 years that you should expect a rate hike. So when it comes, it's not going to be such a surprise. And in reality, if you look at a rate hike, it's still going to be nothing. Interest rates are still going to be historically low. If they, you know, raise by 25 basis points the next, you know, five times they meet, we're still going to be at historical low. So it's not really a big deal. It's going to be a headline news. But the Fed is going to start raising rates pretty soon because the economy is getting better. But what the bigger thing we have to worry about is as the economy gets better, I know you know this, Andrew, you have to be careful about inflation. And inflation is showing up. And they look at the consumer price index and it's below 2%, and that's their measure. But if you look at the bills that you're paying now, it is unbelievable. If you're looking at electricity, people, you know, again, who are listening to this, so you look at electricity bill, you're looking at food, you're looking at insurance, you're looking at taxes. Almost every one of your bills is going higher, and that's a freight train going downhill. Once it starts, you can't stop it. So you have to start raising rates now because you can't, just like they did back in 2006, 2007. They were still thinking of raising rates in 2007. Remember when Kramer had that big meltdown and said, they don't know nothing. They were thinking about raising rates. So in a way, he was right because he was listening to people saying, we're about to jump out the window. And the Fed was thinking about so they're always behind the curve. I think we're starting to see a lot more inflation here in almost every bill that we pay. And now you're seeing oil prices go back up again as well. So even the bills that people pay altogether, it's costing more, which is probably going to result in less spending. But I think you have to raise rates here and get them back to normal because it's getting pretty crazy with net.
Well, normal. Wait. Normal versus raising rates. Normal. I'm just going to throw out a number here. I'm going to give you 2% is not normal, by the way. 3% is not normal. 4% is normal. So you're just saying raise rates maybe to 1%. Which would be?
Yeah, I would say that in this environment, 2% would be normal in this environment today, but we're at zero. So you have to start raising and get to that process. I mean, because it's getting out of hand right now, and it's been 6 years. And you know, now what do? Every single country, we have 20 countries in the past month or two, same thing, easing. 20 different countries. Why? Because they see the blueprint where, wow, look at U.S. You know, they have no risk at all. Nothing happened. Everybody's more wealthy, and they were in this, all this trouble, and they ease, and the quantitative easings, they all worked. Everybody's following our lead at the same time. So you're looking at inflation going to hit at the same time. It's going to be, you don't hear me say this often because I'm not one of those end-of-the-world people, but it could result in a lot lower stock prices. Inflation, it will be in a lot of trouble. It's difficult to control, but we need to start raising rates now.
You know, it's interesting because I agree with you on much of the inflation discussion, that things are costing more. I also agree with you that when you look at the core numbers and the official numbers and the things that they look at, it's not really a terribly high amount of inflation. But I think really the Fed is very nervous. One of the things that I do find is it possible, if we think about the idea that the idea of the Fed raising rates, just the idea of it, has moved the dollar higher, right? Because as the economy gets stronger, the dollar moves higher against other currencies. It moves the dollar higher, which has the effect of slowing the economy, which now we're seeing show up in areas like the manufacturing that I mentioned earlier, and GDP is slowing down. So the idea that the Fed, by the way, has no date dependency on what they're doing, basically shifts their whole stance whenever they feel like it, and says, oh, well, you know, we may do it here, we may do it there, we'll see, it's not going to be here, it's not going to be there. The IMF piped in this week and says, oh, please, oh my, wait till 2016 before you raise rates. And, you know, the whole idea of the data dependency, and that I find that to be quite reprehensible on their part, because we know that data is noisy. It's always noisy. It's seasonally adjusted, it's revised, you know, you get three different shots at GDP, right? And
Andrew, even look at the housing data, right? Because of the weather, the housing data was horrendous last month. Right. And that was all because of the weather, right? It was one of the worst winters ever. That was used as, whoa, we need to, like you said, the data, we're always going to have a piece of data that's negative. And what happened? Housing bounced right back. Oh, housing's okay now. So like you said, if they're data dependent, they'll never, ever raise rates because there's always going to be something in there that's a negative.
But what's going on with retail and the consumer? Because this is one of my favorite pet peeves. Everybody knows this, and I think you know this, that when oil prices go down, it's good for the economy and good for people spending. When oil prices go up, it has no effect on people spending and no effect on the economy, which is a fascinating, I find that to be fascinating. I find it to be total bullshit, but I find it to be fascinating. Okay. But what's your take on why is it that the retail, especially this, I mean, if you look at retailers, generally speaking now, especially like the teen apparel and many of the clothing retailers, et cetera, they're doing terribly.
Well, you know, never as a stock analyst, if you're looking to pick a stock, never ever look at oil and where oil prices are.
I get that. But I'm talking about the fact that the consumer is fading.
Well, I don't know if the consumer is really fading. I mean, we're conditioned to believe that. But I tell you, you do a podcast, I do a podcast. They're one of the top two podcasts on iTunes. I get thousands of emails. Everybody tells me the same thing, that business is really, really good right now, about 90% of the people. If they tell me it's bad, I'm going to tell you it's bad. I'm just listening to them. So you know, you can't really argue that point. But I don't know if we're conditioned as Americans to just feel like our lives aren't that good, but you're listening to a podcast, you know, through your new iPhone right now, probably in your car, and, you know, things are not as bad as people believe. I just don't think we're that horrible in terms of consumers.
I'm not saying that it's we're in the toilet by any means. I'm just saying the slope. All I'm saying is the slope of consumption, so it seems, excluding your iPhone. Because you know what? If you exclude the iPhone, seriously now, if you exclude the iPhone, which means excluding Apple, do you realize the earnings, what it would look like on the S&P 500 and what the economy in terms of what it would look like? I mean, we're talking about a massive amount of money spent. And by the way, I'm not talking about just the iPhone. I'm talking about all the peripherals involved in the iPhone or Apple or even Samsung. I mean, we're talking about, you know, we're really in a smartphone communication society. That's what everything is linked from. I mean, you think about it. All of it's related to internet I'll give you two things. Technology and healthcare, biotech. Those are two things really that have been steaming ahead, right?
They've been steaming ahead, but I'm going to bring up the retail thing with you really quick, because I think when you're looking at companies and what they've learned to do, even with the smartphone, is you have to give those guys credit for marketing, right? I mean, there's certain even in my business, I mean, there's certain guys in newsletter business that market, you know, we all write newsletters, but there's some that are giants because they market better than others. So if you look at what they're doing with the, you know, the smartphone, I mean, take Facebook, for example, right? We all buy stuff. We all need stuff, right? So they almost make advertising fun, right? Because now that you're putting all your personal information, they're monitoring you. Yes, they're monitoring you. You know, you click everything off. They're definitely monitoring you. That, for me, if I go golfing and I like to golf and, you know, Pro V1's Titleist are the best balls, they're very expensive. I'm getting discounts now to go get those. So they're making it through Facebook because maybe they see pictures or maybe I talked about golf or whatever, but they come out of nowhere. And if you can get discounts for everything that you purchase, that's a good thing. So, you know, when I'm going to Exploring is good, am I just buying golf balls? No, I might buy another thing or something else. So, you know, they're making marketing more fun where you're not forced in the middle of a basketball game to watch whatever commercial's there. They're right. Sending you target ads for things that you buy. And that's why I think, you know, Facebook, you know, is saying this all along.
Wait, I thought during a basketball game there was a mandatory rest period and just the advertiser filled that, no?
Like, there's
or is it a mandatory advertising that they rest for?
Oh, mandatory. They have 10 timeouts. They have 10 timeouts. You guys see college basketball. It's unwatchable. Right. So a team can't get momentum anymore.
Television's unwatchable. I can't, you know what?
You can't watch it.
You can't watch television anymore. You know, you have to do the fast forward thing. I was watching something the other day, and I calculated like 6 minutes. And it wasn't even a particular time. It was 6 minutes of commercials. I said, are you kidding me? And like 3 minutes of show.
Yeah.
That's not good.
I mean, I tape, a lot of people can't do this, but I tape, I'm a big sports fan. I tape sports games. And what I do is I shut off all my social media and then I'll start watching. Say if a football game starts at 1, ends at 4, I'll start watching at 3 o'clock. I will catch up before the game's over just by fast forwarding through the commercials. That's how many commercials there are. Mm. It's unbelievable.
I'm going to call you for now and tell you scores just to screw you up.
No, I'm not going to answer the phone.
All right, let's talk about some other things here. Let's talk about the data breach. We saw that there's been a variety of data breaches recently. We saw the I think it was 100,000 IRS documents that were, or at least some information from 100,000 different areas, and people were hacked in the IRS. Now, one of the things I found out recently was, I don't know if you know this, but the IRS is on Windows XP. Are you aware of this?
No.
They have not upgraded. And I found out from, it was not surprising, right? But I found out from a friend of mine who works at Microsoft that they are paying an extremely high extended service contract to Microsoft due to the fact, or for Microsoft XP, because it's no longer covered. It's no longer, they have no plan to cover and service XP anymore. Remember they did that a few years ago? Mm-hmm. So they still have this. And for whatever reason, they haven't even, I mean, think about that. Microsoft XP, and then you had Vista, and then you had 7, and you have 8, and 10's coming out. Kind of behind the scenes. Anyway, behind the times. Here's something. There was a recent breach. We saw that millions of potential federal employees, there was a breach. Again, this is going, there's a lot of these. One of the things we're seeing is that companies like a FireEye, Symantec maybe, Palo Alto Networks, Vasco Data Systems, and others have been doing very well. There's an ETF with the symbol HACK, H-A-C-K, which is an all-time high now. One of the things that I'm concerned about is this going to at all be detrimental to the economy? Because so much of our things are now in the cloud, online, available to steal. Where does this go? I mean, we also saw the breach of Home Depot. I mean, what, did any thought about this whole thing?
I have a close friend who's one of the best hackers. He was actually the whole war game story where he changed his grades or his system. He got caught and he didn't even know it was a felony, but he was so good writing code at such an early age. And this is about 20 years ago or 15 years ago that the government hired him. So they still contract him. He's one of those crazy secret guys. He's really cool. I don't mention his name, but I talk about him a lot. He tells me he could basically hack into any. I mean, he works for the largest banks as well. He could hack into anything. I think he threw out a number. 90% of the stuff he could get into if he wanted to. And I don't know if anybody knows this, but Andrew, you're very, very good writing code, computer systems. Most people are just putting their sites up. I mean, even the big companies, they're hiring people, but there's always a way to get in to hack these names. Right. I think, you know, one of the things how you could stop it, you're never going to stop hacking because those guys are unbelievably, they're amazing. But what you could stop is that data needs to be sold to somebody. And I think if you could stop that type of market where you could find out who's doing it, then you could do it. But for now, these companies, and if you look at the valuations on some of them, you're going to say, I would never touch these things. They were expensive 50% ago. But the market for this is enormous because this data must be protected. The whole world is going on the internet. Internet speeds are getting faster. Everybody's streaming. Believe it or not, more and more and more stuff. We're still in the infancy in terms of how fast things can get processed, storage, cloud. This is all stuff that's in its infancy that it's going to get even more stuff we're going to see online and through the cloud. So these companies, even though they have expensive valuations, just like Apple had a 60 PE, and Celgene had like an 80 PE in 2004. Both of those stocks are up probably around 4,000 or 5,000% since then. These stocks are expensive, but the growth market they operate in is enormous. And there's another company I'm going to throw in there.
The PE of Apple is what now? It's 15, 16?
Yeah, I know. So it's unbelievable how much growth they have. But even Splunk too has, they're mostly a big data company, but they have a suite of services. And that's an expensive company, a company that I like a lot, Splunk. I think that they're one of the best big data companies, which goes into retail and how, you know, they're analyzing people to predict future trends. But they also have a security segment which works with all their big data stuff. So they're doing well. But, you know, if you're looking at it, the valuations are expensive. Maybe you wait for a pullback, but those companies probably have much, much more growth potential because it's an enormous trend, hundreds of billions of dollars, and people need to protect it because when you have a Home Depot and you're looking at Target, I can name hundreds of companies that got their data stolen, and even J.P. Morgan, if they get it stolen again and again, what are you going to do? You're going to leave J.P. Morgan. You're going to go someplace else. So right now, it's getting worse to the point where they need to pay for this.
And you know, you talk about a pullback on Splunk. Splunk recently had earnings last week. Earnings actually looked pretty good. Outlook was fine, but probably not as good as was to be expected in terms of a very significant growth company. And the stock did pull back, 7 or 8% after the earnings?
Yeah, so the last three quarters, they reported very good results and same trend. The stock ran up into it, and they reported great earnings. It went up, and then it came down like 5-7%. Every single quarter, you do the same. It's a little expensive. But the bottom line is they're still growing, more than 25%, 30%. That growth trend that they're just signing more existing clients and paying more for services. They have a ton of business, over $100,000 per client now. They have new products rolling out that people are paying even more for. But everybody I talk to within the industry says Splunk is the best. They love using. Even Palo Alto actually has a service where it's included with Splunk, and they're working together. And Palo Alto said they love it because they actually talk about one of their competitors that they joined together to use these services. And they said, we like this partnership because Splunk is great. So everybody I hear, if you're looking at all the biggest companies, if you look Comcast, AT&T, across every single industry, they all have Splunk.
What is the symbol? SPLK?
Yes.
SPLK, yeah. All right, let's moving on to something else. Yeah, one of the things that we've been noticing, you can't not notice this in your face, is the whole buyback and dividend move by companies over the last several years. But with interest rates really low, what's happened is that companies have found that one of the ways they can use all the cash they have on the balance sheets, which, by the way, is enormous, more than just enormous in the word enormous, I mean ridiculously enormous. Like, wow, where the hell did all this money come from? A lot of it came from, sales. Also came from the fact that companies have done a lot of debt issuance, and that has helped them. They did a very low rates. And what they're doing is, traditionally, when you would issue debt, you could do a few things with it. You could do some maybe merger acquisition activity. One of the things they have found is that people seem to like the whole idea of stock buybacks. And we know why, because many stocks have shrunk their float by 20-25% over the last couple of years. That's enabling them to keep their earnings higher. And I have my own issue with that. And I think that once that stops and once that rotation of, let's enhance our earnings because revenues are not growing that fast with stock buybacks kind of dies down, well, things are going to be looked at a bit differently. Now, Goldman Sachs comes out with a piece and says, you know what? They're doing it all wrong. Companies have been so involved in the buyback of shares for some time and dividends and payback to shareholders and all this. A lot of it is due to the fact that you have companies that are listening to activists, which, of course, activists like it because they invest in a company. They know the earnings are going to go up and they can be managed, and that's good. But they said, you know what? We think it's much better at this point for companies to stop all the buyback activity or a chunk of it and start looking into not capital expenditures, which is another way that they could possibly do some expansion, but mergers and acquisition activity. And it struck me. I'm going to leave it there. I'll tell you my comments of what I think about that. What's your thoughts on that? And why did they say it?
I know it's funny because Goldman, of course, and we mentioned this before, and you mentioned it, where Goldman makes more money on M&A. So, but I don't think that's why. I really don't think that's why they're saying it.
A little bit.
I mean, maybe a little bit, but really, I mean, look. If you want to say that, it's fine. But I agree with Goldman Sachs 100% because if you're looking at – you always want to buy back stock when your stock is cheap, right? There's nothing wrong with buying back your stock. But when you have Apple looking to – they increased their buyback from $90 billion to $140 billion. Icahn loves that, by the way, because he knows the more they increase, the stock can go up. He could sell his whole position tomorrow if he wants, even though he said, I think it's going to double from here. You don't know what he's going to do is his intentions. Usually they're short-term natured when you have activists, usually. And I love Icahn. He's amazing. And it has a great performance. But if you're looking what Goldman Sachs says, when you're buying your stock back, it's okay to do it when it's cheap. But now you're looking at Coca-Cola, right, and McDonald's and Clorox, where you're seeing very little sales growth. They're trading at multiples. What do you have? McDonald's at 19 times forward earnings. Clorox at 22 times forward earnings, right? And then you have Coca-Cola almost at 20 times forward earnings. And they're barely growing sales.
And so by the way, let me interrupt you. McDonald's has not really put up some good numbers in quite some time in terms of earnings and outlook, right? They even just recently which you always have to put up as a red flag, stop their regular monthly updates of same-store sales, right?
Yeah, McDonald's is
but the stock hasn't moved in any considerable way.
I mean, the stock hasn't moved, and you have activists saying it's going to go to 120. McDonald's is in big trouble, and that's one of the things that I said in my podcast. And there's a reason for this. And people point, well, McDonald's went through all these problems back in 2002, 2003. That was mad cow disease, and the stock fell to 12 times earnings. McDonald's price has not really fallen. They're struggling with sales. They have to raise the minimum wage. Their menu's terrible. There's a secular change in the way people eat. And yet they're still saying that we're going to return X amount of dollars. I think they said something like $90 billion over the next 10 years. If you're looking at their numbers, they don't generate enough cash flow. It cost about $10 billion in buybacks and dividends for this company, right? And they were able to do that when sales were growing. But sales haven't grown for the last 2 years. They're not expected to grow this year, and they're barely expected to grow for the next 2 years. So they have to do two things. They're not generating enough cash flow to buy back that much stock that they did in the past, or they got to cut the dividend. They've been raising their dividend for 25 years. They're not going to cut it.
There's no way they're going to cut it.
No. So they're not going to be able to buy back enough stock at this price. We saw this trend happen with another company called IBM, and look what happened. The company got
nailed. IBM also, the stock is not moving. I mean, we know that they did some terrible deals selling off companies, and they had to pay for it in the billion-dollar range. You know, we see that they are continually doing their best to shrink their float. We know that. And you know what? All the companies you mentioned, what they have in common? IBM, McDonald's, you mentioned all, you know, a variety of different companies that are doing buybacks, and Buffett. What's up with that?
Well, not so much. I don't know if he has a position at McDonald's. I know he has a position at IBM, but I know he bought IBM, I believe.
Coca-Cola. He's got Coca-Cola.
He does have Coca-Cola forever, and the compounding of the dividends is fine for him, and he's gotten in so early that, you know, it's just generating steady cash flow. I'm talking about right now for people who want to buy the McDonald's and stuff like that. If you're looking at IBM too, this company was what, 220? It's like under 170 now. So, but it's been like this for a while, and it's gotten nailed, and it's been terrible if you look at the chart. And now the company's doing different things, and you look at, this is where it's different from McDonald's. Now you're looking at a company that's trading 11 times earnings, right? Because it's been so bad, it's been depressed. McDonald's hasn't gone through that trend yet. So people, you got to realize that the market's trading for 18 times earnings. So they're giving McDonald's a growth multiple, and yet the company can't grow sales, and they don't have enough money to buy back their stock anymore, at least as much as they did in the past. So if you're looking at McDonald's specifically, and even Coca-Cola, and buying those names, that's why I love, compared to that, I love AT&T. I like GE. AT&T has been a dog for such a long time. Finally, they're going to take over DirecTV. They have a growth component. Finally, they spent a lot of money because they got their butt kicked by everybody else, you know, in the wireless space, and everybody lowering prices, that now they're positioned. Even GE has been a terrible stock. If you're looking, they're selling off all their divisions. All their underperforming divisions are becoming a pure play in the industrial internet, one of the biggest trends in the world, where machines talk to each other, and everything that they sell, they're going to be able to track big data and stuff and make services, service margins now as well. So you're looking at GE saying they're going to buy back their stock, or AT&T. I like that because their stock has not moved in a while. It's a little cheaper. So I agree with Goldman Sachs when you're saying a lot of these companies, even Apple, people don't realize Apple's growth is going to slow to single digits by next year. It's been great. They just, they're almost a pure play on of an iPhone. That's almost all their revenue now. So you're looking at it, and they have to generate $250 billion in sales. How are they going to do that? I have no idea. But that sales growth and earnings growth is going to slow down to single digits. I don't want to see Apple increase their buyback by $50 billion right now. Use that $50 billion and buy big data companies. There's so many different industries to get into. I just don't like Apple buying back their stock today at where it is. It's all-time high. With growth ready to slow by next year.
Right. All right. Let's take a look at a kind of moving along my list here. Company called Yelp. Now, Yelp, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I see that Yelp, there is a standing order of, it looks like option expert or option exercise and then sale in the neighborhood, about 8,000 shares per week by the CEO, the CFO, the COO is also selling in a good amount. Stock really hasn't been doing well. There's some issues also if you look at it. As a matter of fact, I think maybe I saw, it was Stansberry. Somebody wrote, maybe it was your company. Somebody wrote a piece on Yelp. I'm not sure if it was Weiss. Did you guys write something on Yelp recently?
No, not anybody from us now.
Oh. Well, I saw a piece on Yelp. Okay, putting that aside, it was a big, you know, article on shorting Yelp and why. And a lot of the things had to do with the fact that, you know, fake reviews and all sorts of real harsh tactics on getting their customers to pay, you know, the various restaurants or, you know, places that they review. And I'm seeing all these share sales. And again, you don't know what that is. And if it's a planned sale, it's one thing. But we're talking about a lot of money in a planned sale that's going out the door, okay, by the top execs. And on top of that, they're not seeing really good growth. As a matter of fact, pretty bad growth. They came out with earnings a couple of weeks back or a month back or so. It was pretty poor. And then a week later, there was this mysterious, oh my gosh, there's possibly we're going to put ourselves up for sale. Stock rocketed higher. Then it came back down a little bit. There was some kind of things that went on there. And now we're seeing, and the reason I'm bringing this up is, there's a Seeking Alpha article out that by August, the company could be sold. And I'm thinking, first of all, you know, it was a pretty directed article saying this is going to happen. I guess, first of all, if the company was to be sold in August and it was released on Seeking Alpha and the person knew that this was happening, it would be inside information, that would be a big problem. So I got to discount the article as just mere speculation. But what do you think about, you know, first of all, I don't know if you have any opinion on Yelp. And secondly, about these kind of rumors and innuendos like we saw with Avon and all these different things that are happening in the market on a regular basis, even with Greece, that kind of is very disruptive and why there seems to be no oversight on any of this.
Well, for one thing, Seeking Alpha, I like the site and I'll use it to read opinion articles and stuff like that. But everybody has an agenda and anybody could write for that site. So that person could be, they're going to get taken over right away. And then everybody, they send it throughout everybody. And then that person could actually sell the stock immediately afterwards. You don't know what they do. So be very, very careful. I like the site. I know a lot of people that work there and I do read articles, but you can't read something on Seeking Alpha and just think like it's automatically fact. You have to do your own homework, first of all. Basically, with anybody, what anybody writes. But with that, people use it. I know people use it as an agenda to, you know, they'll short a huge, take a massive short position and then boom, they'll put this article on Seeking Alpha and it goes everywhere. It gets picked up by Yahoo, gets picked up by MarketWatch and everything. And next thing you know, this article that you mentioned on CNBC and this short seller is why he's covering his position and makes money, which he doesn't have to tell you. So just be careful with that. Getting back to Yelp, what we talked about earlier with Palo Alto, we talked about, you know, FireEye and Splunk and stuff like that. With Yelp is a growth company that stopped growing. So when you have an expensive company and you're saying, well, how could I see this? If you want to go on a free site, go on Yahoo Finance, put in key statistics, look at the trailing earnings, look at the forward earnings. They're the same, right? That means they're not expected to grow earnings year over year. A lot of companies don't grow earnings year over year, but they're cheap. When you have an expensive growth company that does that, it's a red flag. So is this company going to get taken over in August? I don't think anybody knows that. And if they did, it would be insider trading. But, you know, and again, it came from Seeking Alpha, which is not really a great source. For Yelp itself, if you're looking at it, maybe it can go up. But that's a kind of a red flag for me. When I see a high growth company, a company that's, you know, it's okay to have an expensive valuation, like, you know, Andrew, as long as you're able to follow through quarter after quarter. Yelp has not followed through. That's why the company's down. But they're not expected to go earnings, and it's still a very expensive company. If they miss another quarter, you'll see it get cut in half from here. So for me, I would avoid it. You never, ever want to buy a company based on a takeover because nobody knows if that's going to happen. You want more fundamental analysis behind it. But with Yelp, I would avoid it. Doesn't mean it doesn't go higher, but I just think I need to see another quarter or two to make sure this company is growing, because if not, they're going to get crushed because it's so expensive.
Well, with full disclosure here, we have a small position short this stock around the price it's currently trading at. We're getting a little bit lengthy here, but I want to ask you a couple things. First of all, if you haven't noticed, we're talking with Frank Curzio. You go to frankcurzio.com, listen to his great podcast over on iTunes. We'll have more information on Frank and how to get in touch with him on the show notes for this episode on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I want to talk about China for a second. You know this company, Xiaomi?
No.
Xiaomi has, you know, when I tell you about it, you're going to know. So they have like an iPhone lookalike. It's an Android-based system. It's a very big seller in China. Very inexpensive. They have the a GoPro alternative. It's like $79 or something like that.
Yeah, haven't they become like the second largest smartphone maker now?
They're big. Yeah. Now, one of the things they also have is like, you know, the Fitbit thing, you know, that arm bracelet stupid thing. Mm-hmm. So they have that called the Mi Band. I bought it. $15. And they have the new Mi store online. Now, this little stupid band, I'm wearing it right now. It's a little plasticky band with a little metal thing in it. And it links to you. It has a little app. It links to your iPhone. It told me I slept 6.5 hours last night. I was up a couple of times. I don't know what it does. It, you know, maybe it's tracking whatever. How many steps I take when I run. It knows when I'm running. It knows when I'm walking, and all that. So kind of for $15. Whereas a Fitbit, I don't know how much it is, $150 or something like that, or $100.
Probably $100. Yeah. And the watch, you know, the Apple.
The watch isn't out yet. The watch isn't out yet. The watch, they don't have a watch yet, but they have a real cool flat panel or flat, you know, screen TV, mm-hmm. with like a computer built into it with Bluetooth where you can play actual games on it. Very cool stuff. They have headphones that are very inexpensive, very good looking stuff. And we'll see, again, I don't know the comparison with the Fitbit. Like this thing has a plastic band and it has like a 30-day battery life in it. Just a little stupid thing. When my phone rings, it rings. Point is, when you look at, for example, a company like Fitbit, which may be coming out with an IPO, you look at GoPro, for example, where GoPro has had the market and they slowed down. They had that one spectacular quarter and it slowed down. But now you have an alternative potentially. Maybe, you know, it needs a little bit more English language directions on the Show Me GoPro thing. Maybe it needs to get to 4K. Right now it's a 1080p, but for most people that's probably okay. But for $79 or $89 versus a couple hundred plus for the same base model as this, is this going to have a material impact, do you think? I mean, one of the reasons is that I just don't see the future for GoPro.
Well, there's a couple of things we'll address. You asked a few questions there. I would tell you that thing on your wrist, and I've done a lot of homework. I attend the Consumer Electronics Show every single year, and I take special executive tours to a company called Shelley Palmer. So I learned from the top technology executives for consumer products, and they always have these crazy statistics. And one of those statistics, so you see that watch that you're wearing right now, that band, you're not going to wear it 3 months from now, 4 months from now.
I may not wear it tomorrow.
The average person does not wear it for longer than 6 months because after a while, when you work out, you know how many steps you're taking. You know how many 10,000 steps is. You know your heart rate. Even me, I've been working out a lot. I know my heart rate's around 125, 130.
Yeah, when I can't breathe anymore, I'm pretty much at a point where I'm at a good level.
Yeah, but you get to know these statistics by having it all the time, where if you're really working out every single day, and that's a thing, and they're going to have other healthcare benefits like the watch has for Apple and stuff like that, but I just think this is one of the most overrated trends I've ever seen. There's so many people in this industry.
But for $15, it's worth it versus $100, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
$15, it's a deal.
And you're looking at GoPro, and I have to say a few things about GoPro, because GoPro, when I went to the Consumer Electronics Show, and I went the last 2 years, there's 30 companies that are doing, even from China, that have these, you know, cameras that hook onto your bikes and stuff like that. And they also had drones where if you put a chip in your pocket, the drone will be 7 feet above you. So they have an aerial view and they'll follow you. Say if you have a BMX bike or a motorcycle, the drone will follow you in the air and take aerial views of you. And they have these 360 cameras. So for me, I wrote an article and said, you know, I would take profits in GoPro. In fact, I think it's a great short. And this was like in January and the stock came down a lot. I like GoPro. I have a GoPro camera. I like what they're doing right now because the competition is heating up tremendously and the players are very, very big and have deep pockets like Sony and LG and stuff like that. However, they just came out with a new 360 camera. They just came out with a drone and you know, they have that market right now and they're doing well and there's a lot of competition, but it's the standard in the industry. So I'm interested to see how management reacts to it. They're reacting positively. The last couple of things had a lot of good news and you're seeing the momentum in that stock actually come back. I'm a GoPro fan. I just thought the stock was incredibly expensive, and I own the product. But, you know, you have to be careful there. But now that management is actually addressing these, they seem like they're getting ahead of the curve. You may see that stock run a little bit higher, even though that's another one that's very expensive.
One question on a stock. I need to ask you another one that's on my kind of watch list for a while here. And I just want one possible. I'm going to give you a multiple choice question, okay?
All right.
Shake Shack. Reasonably valued, overvalued, terribly overvalued. Oh, holy crap. This is out of control.
Don't short it.
Okay. But don't short it only because people like their hamburgers.
You know what? You never want to really short a company that has a good product. And because you get wrecked every time. And I'm speaking from experience, unfortunately. And that's why even with GoPro, I saw the trend break down a little bit. And there's a lot of competition coming to the market. That was a little different. But 90% of the time, like Tesla, don't short Tesla. You're going to get killed. Netflix, don't short Netflix. You're going to get killed. I learned this. I shorted IMAX, and I bought IMAX. I recommended it 3, and it went to 12. And I said, okay, enough with the 3D thing. They're not really generating profits, and the stock went to 30, and now it's 40. Be careful if you're going to short a stock. Not only that has a good management team, and you never want to short a guy like Elon Musk ever.
Not. Right.
But, you know, don't short 100% based on valuation. You can't look at Shake Shack and say these fundamentals are terrible. People like it right now. Maybe it goes high. Eventually, it'll come down. But when you're shorting this stock, time is a factor. and you don't know when that's going to happen. So it's a very dangerous game. I know people tried to short Chipotle for such a long time, and that kept going higher. It's finally starting to dip down. But when you're looking at valuations, you know, if the company has a good product and you know you hear word of mouth and people are talking about it, be careful shorting those stocks. Don't look at valuation. Don't make that the sole reason. Even the best short sellers, they'll talk about accounting. They'll talk about a China division. They're not just going to say, well, this company's expensive. It should go down 30%. The best short sellers don't do that. Even Jim Chanos gets on and says that there's going to be a reckoning in China and everything's going to fall apart.
Oh, that didn't work out so well.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well. He's not saying, well, it's a little overvalued. Well, yeah. You know, that's not the playbook. Yeah. So just
well,
be careful.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, the fact is that you did see Shake Shack do a blow off high and then come back down, but then you saw it kind of start moving back higher. I just kind of curious because I found it to be many of these restaurant companies that shouldn't be trading at these multiples. You know, by the way, everything that comes out is the next Chipotle. It's the next Chipotle. No, it's not the next Chipotle. It's a freaking hamburger shop. And, you know, who knows if it's the next Wetson's, if you remember that back from the day. You remember,
yeah, listen.
Remember Wetson's?
Wait,
do you remember Wetson's?
No.
You're from New York. You don't remember Wetson's?
Wetson's? No.
That's because it's out of business. But it was there was always a McDonald's, Burger King, and
when
Wetson's.
When did it go out of business?
Probably when right about when you were born. I would say, listen, I remember probably in the 80s. I say the early 80s.
Yeah, I was born in 72. I'm an old man now.
Yeah, I was in seventh grade at that point. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. And there's probably so much more we can talk about here, but we're out of time. Frank Curzio, frankcurzio.com. You need to check out all the things he does, the newsletters that he writes. And we'll have, again, a lot of that on the show notes. You can always look him up and make sure to get his great podcast, which is... What is it? Unplugged. You're unplugged.
Wall Street Unplugged.
Because you know what? It's not plugged. He's plugged into Wall Street, by the way. Now, let's get this straight. He is plugged into Wall Street, but the whole connotation there is he's not talking the Wall Street line. That's the connotation. He's giving you straight poop.
So, exactly. Bring in Wall Street to Main Street.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we like to do.
All right. Frank Curzio, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, bud.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Join me on DH Unplugged on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. Check out all the things that are available, like the Aero strategy. Check out the TDIMG managed growth strategy. All this on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And like I said, any questions, let me know. Twitter, send them in that way. Send them in by email, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.